everybody, and welcome back to our next episode of Banter Box, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week, we will be reviewing a different production, whether it be a movie, TV show, book, etc. And this week, we watched Heathers. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey, I'm Samuel.
I'm John.
All right, so before we start, just general first impressions. I think, John, you were the only one who had seen this movie before. Neither me or Sam had seen it.
Well, before we get started, yes, we have a mature content warning. This covers various touchy subjects. Danielle, if you want to list those
yes,
off.
Yes, so, so this specific movie covers just a whole lot of kind of rough topics, including suicide, sex, some acts that are somewhat non-consensual, murder, eating disorders, and essentially a terroristic attack on a school. So just so you know, before we get into all the topics here, that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about. So if any of that is going to be a little too touchy or anything like that, this may not be the episode you want to listen to, especially if you're just starting with us. But yeah, that's just our warning to you guys. And as always, spoiler podcast, so we'll be giving away a whole lot of stuff about this movie. So anyway, now that that's out of the way.
Yes, I have watched this on multiple occasions, both the musical and the movie. The movie I've seen, I think 4 times now. You'd be surprised how bored you get whenever you scroll through Netflix and you've already finished your favorite series.
Yeah, so I wasn't familiar with the movie at all. I knew it had Winona Ryder in it. That's about the extent of my knowledge. However, I am very familiar with the musical. I've seen it. I've seen our college did a production of it. I've listened to the music. I've watched YouTube productions of it. So I'm very, very familiar with the musical, but I had never seen the movie at all.
I had little to no knowledge of anything with this. I knew it was a musical, and I'd heard some songs from it. I had seen people do a couple of scenes from it, and then I saw the Riverdale episode.
Which is probably the worst way to kind of
No, John. No, John. It's the best.
It's the best way, the best John. Way.
Not sponsored by Riverdale, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely sponsored by Riverdale.
No, we
will absolutely do a Riverdale podcast at some point.
Oh, 100%. We're just waiting. We're waiting. We got to hold back. We got to save it. So, yeah, that's really the extent of my knowledge. I knew a couple of things with the plot points, and I knew there were multiple girls named Heather. I did not know that Veronica was the main character. I did not know that Winona Ryder and Christian Slater were in it. I knew little to nothing going in. So that provided an interesting lack of lens for this. So this movie came out in 1989. It was directed by Michael Lemon. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. It was written by Daniel Waters, and it stars Winona Ryder as Veronica and Christian Slater as Jason Dean. You can watch it on Hulu, Sling, or Amazon Prime if you have a subscription, or you can watch it for free on two things I've never heard of, which are called Tubi and Pluto TV. And the IMDb summary for the movie says, in order to get out of the snobby clique that is destroying her good girl reputation, an intelligent teen teams up with the dark sociopath in a plot to kill the cool kids. I don't know how accurate that summary is.
It's not that accurate.
I don't think it's that accurate. From what I saw, that's not exactly what she did intentionally. But Samuel, would you like to tell us some other stuff that the director and writer have done?
Yeah, so the director is mainly a TV director. He did a couple of movies in the 80s. Heathers was by far the biggest. But he's recently directed a lot of pretty big TV shows, different episodes. He's done episodes of American Horror Story, Californication, Veronica Mars, and Jessica Jones. And then the writer, Daniel Waters, he hasn't done much, but he has done. He did Batman Returns, the second Tim Burton movie, which was pretty good, I guess. And then he did a movie called Hudson Hawk, which was a 90s movie. And then he also wrote Vampire Academy. So those are his biggest credits. Neither of them have really done much big stuff, but they've done a little bit here and there.
Yeah, I mean, judging by the what I learned just about the company that made this movie, that doesn't really surprise me all that much. But yeah, so y'all ready to start breaking this down?
Let's get into it.
All right. So, to start with our summary, in Westerberg High School in Sherwood, Ohio, Veronica Sawyer is part of a popular but feared clique that also consists of three other wealthy and beautiful girls with the same first name, Heather Chandler, Heather Duke, and Heather McNamara. However, she has grown tired of them and longs to return to her old life with her nerdy friends.
So, okay, so first off, the opening scene, the croquet scene, the CGI, I didn't know what was going on with that. It was weird. It was bad CGI, which is to be expected from the 80s, but yes. Not only that, it didn't make sense. I didn't get what they were saying.
Well, they were saying that, we're talking about the point where it is revealed that they are hitting croquet balls at Veronica's head in the grass.
Yeah.
Which is obviously not actually happening, but it's... Like, I gathered it, and when I looked up a bunch of stuff about this afterwards, I gathered that they were just... It's all from Veronica's perspective, so right. That's the way that she sees her... that's the way that she sort of sees her position in the group.
Yeah, it was just weird, because they showed that, and then they just moved on. And I didn't quite get what they were saying, but also it's... I had an interesting perspective on it coming in, because I'm so familiar with the musical, and the movie actually opens up... after the musical. The musical gives you some precursor stuff. It shows Veronica actually getting in with the Heathers and how all of that relationship started. So it's an interesting, it was kind of an interesting place to start the movie, kind of in the middle of the plot of what I was familiar with.
What is up with, like, writers at that current point in time giving no context and just, like, they want to just throw you into the conflict immediately?
So... people these days assume the audience is dumb.
Well, see.
I guess so.
Well, and that's the thing, is that I didn't have a huge problem with it because they did, you know, they built the world more than Mad Max did, that's for sure.
That's for and darn so, sure.
Because I at least understood, you know, that Veronica had recently become a part of this group and she used to have a lot of, like, other friends that weren't cool or whatever. And I understood that, you know, Christian Slater's character was sort of like the new edgy kid. Like, it wasn't hard for me to gather what was going on, but it also is a more accessible, easier to understand environment. You know, it's high school.
Yeah.
But I didn't need a whole lot of world building from them. I felt like they did an okay job without spoon feeding it.
Well, plus, I think it's kind of easier for the high school setting because sci-fi, little more world building needs to be set up mm-hmm. when it comes to that kind of genre. But if I'm not mistaken, the musical came out after
the movie. Movie was first, then musical.
And the I call it the reverse Bring It On because Heather's the Musical, I recommend watching Heather's the Musical first, then going into looking into the movie, because I feel like you get more of the characters' intentions and depth
mm-hmm.
within the musical. And granted, yeah. You know, musical has song numbers to explain everything.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's like it's a lot easier to digest and it'll make the movie a little more cut and dry. But also, you kind of be a little spoiled.
Yeah. What one thing I actually liked better about the musical that was... It was interesting, because obviously, having seen the movie, I didn't know this. In the musical, they actually combined two of the characters, Betty and Martha. In the movie, Martha is just kind of the loner girl who the Heathers pick on, and then later tries to commit suicide. And then Betty is Veronica's best friend, or ex-best friend, I should say. Whereas in the musical, it actually starts out with Veronica and Martha that are best friends, and then everything that happens with Martha stays the same, but also everything that happens with Betty is also Martha in the musical.
It personalizes.
Betty just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And it really provides, the scene where Martha tries to kill herself hit a lot harder in the musical than in the movie, because she was Betty in the movie.
Yeah, I can see why that would, you know, be more striking. Yeah, I mean, I was fine with the way it started, but then again, I know basically, like, little to nothing about the musical.
Maybe we're judging it too harshly about an adaptation of it, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I will give them props, though. The acting was way better in this film than Gremlins.
That really?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Taking it from an overall cast perspective,
yes,
it's pretty good, like, for that time era.
I mean, we do still have to think it's the 80s. They weren't always going for, like, perfect performances. They were more just going for, I mean, I don't know what they were going for, but it wasn't perfect performances. and so, So I can't judge it too hard just on that basis, because I know that time. But honestly, I wasn't super mad about most of the acting choices. Like, yes, there were some rough moments, but I was kind of like, I mean, this is like, this is supposed to be a satirical thing. So if you're going a little over the top, or if you're a little like kind of too crazy with it, it didn't really bother me.
So I will say the one thing that kind of struck me off the bat that impressed me is all the high schoolers look like high schoolers.
Yes, they actually did.
It is so rare. And I want to say that Winona Ryder was like 18 or 19.
Probably.
When they did this. So, like, they actually looked like high schoolers. I loved it. Because it's so rare. Especially in today's
Today all high schoolers are played by like 35-year-olds. Yeah.
And for those who do not, and how you do not know this person, I do not know. For those of you who do not know Winona Ryder is... She plays Mrs. Wheeler in Stranger Things.
Mrs. Byers.
Mrs. Byers.
Where did I get Wheeler?
I don't
know. No, I'm thinking of Nancy.
You're thinking of Nancy.
You are thinking of Nancy, yeah.
No, Will's mom.
Will's mom,
and she was also the main girl in Beetlejuice, if you saw that. She
was in Little Women. She's been in a ton of stuff in the 90s.
Like I said, if you don't know who she is, I don't know how you don't.
You've seen her in something. For a little bit of context. Everybody has seen her in
something. And if you haven't, you should, because she's great.
She's fantastic.
But moving forward, so Veronica becomes fascinated with Jason J.D. Dean, a new student and rebellious outsider, after he fires blanks on Kurt Kelly and Ram Sweeney in response to them bullying him.
Igloo bullets!
Oh my gosh. Well, we'll get to that. But these were just blanks that he shot in the cafeteria, which I wasn't prepared for the sudden Pulp Fiction feel that I got when he just stood up and said, "I'll repeat myself," and fired off. Because I knew at some point, from what you had told me about the musical, Samuel, first off, I didn't know that he tried to blow up the school. I thought it was a school shooting in the musical. I don't know if I was just, I may have just misinterpreted that.
Yeah.
And so when he stood up and started firing, I was like, oh my gosh, is the whole movie just going to be the whole shooting? Like, what is going on? But then they were like, oh no, it was just blanks. And I was like, oh, okay. And yet he was still allowed to like go back to school and wasn't like immediately expelled.
The 80s were a different time. And I will say, and that's actually a big thing, is in today's world, and it's not that school shootings were ever not a big deal, but Columbine really changed America on that front. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, especially in rural schools, it was not uncommon for high schoolers to have guns on school property. It really wasn't uncommon, especially in rural areas. But after Columbine, that really kind of changed the whole national landscape on everything. So it was a different time. But still, I mean, in today's world, he's expelled immediately.
Oh, immediately, and probably sent to, like, juvie or something. Yeah,
more than likely.
And so, yeah, she becomes fascinated with this kid who just shot blanks at these two guys. She later attends a frat party with Heather Chandler, but refuses to have sex with one of the members and vomits on Chandler. So that whole party scene kind of revealed to me, like, the whole point of the entire movie. Which is that, I mean, it's an accurate thing with high school, is that everyone in high school and everyone in that movie is looking for acceptance from somebody, whether it's just JD didn't really care about general acceptance, but he wanted to be accepted by Veronica, and you know, she wants to be accepted by basically everybody, or else she wouldn't have gone and given up a close friendship to be friends with these Heathers. And even Heather Chandler, you know, when she's in the room with that guy and, you know, like they're making out and she's like, can we just go back to the party? Because the whole point that she's there is she wants to be seen. She wants people to see that she was cool enough to get invited to this college party. She doesn't want to actually do anything. She just wants to be there and be talked about. And then he's like, well, I mean, you're just like, you're so hot, and, you know, kind of coerces her into, like, you know, giving him oral sex. And so it's a whole thing where you know, she does it, and she doesn't leave the party afterwards because she doesn't want to be thought of as, like, a child or as, like, a prude or anything like that. That was the one moment of the movie where I was like, oh, wow, they actually gave her, like, some sympathy points, like, where you see her, like, not want to do this thing, but she's like, I guess I'll do it because I don't want to be thought of as a loser, so.
Yeah, she's not painted as a total B word.
Yeah, like she's not totally horrible. Like she's still pretty awful.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But she's not like they give her that one moment of like of making her sympathetic.
Yeah.
Like I appreciated, you know, kind of seeing that side of her where I was like, "Oh, okay, so she's not just a big, you know, evil Barbie. You know, she actually has things that she doesn't want to do, you know?"
Right.
So I appreciated seeing that scene. So in retaliation, Heather Chandler vows to destroy her reputation because she vomited on her. JD arrives at Veronica's house and they have sex outside. And they express to each other their mutual hatred of Heather Chandler's tyranny. Which I was absolutely shocked that Veronica... I thought Veronica wouldn't... I don't know, I just didn't think that she was a, you know, sleep with someone like the first day you meet them kind of person. That's kind of surprising
so
a little bit.
So what it was, and again, comparing it to the musical, but what it was in the musical is because at the end of the party, after she vomits on her and then they have the big fight, Heather Chandler gives the whole, you know, that's it, you're done, as of tomorrow, your reputation is going to be ruined, and you're done, you know, you're done being one of the cool kids, basically, and gives that whole speech. And so in the musical, that's what leads into that is it's the whole Dead Girl Walking song. She views her life as essentially over. So it's, well, if, you know, I have nothing else to live for, so might as well do this while I can.
Mm. Right.
And it's a whole thing. It's her taking control of her life back from Heather Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
For that one moment, because she knows that the next morning, Heather Chandler is going to be ruining her life and controlling her life again.
Okay.
So that's what it is in the musical, but they didn't really show that much at all in the movie.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah, I see how that would translate better that way. Yeah, it was just surprising to me. But the next morning, Veronica and JD break into Heather Chandler's house, where JD puts drain cleaner in a mug for Chandler, but Veronica dismisses his plan. She mixes orange juice and milk together instead as an attempt to make her vomit and get revenge. However, JD hands Heather Chandler the mug with the drain cleaner, killing her. Which, holy crap, Veronica, why didn't you just run away? And why did you stay with this person immediately?
Because JD's right that a part of Veronica wanted that.
Well, a part of her may have wanted it, but you see later that even... Well, okay, she may have wanted Heather Chandler to die. That's true. A part of her did want that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can see later that she does not like... She doesn't like the idea of just, like, you know, ending someone's life. That's
right,
not something that she's okay
with. So, I think part of Veronica views it as it may have been an accident. Because, remember, Veronica's the one who grabs the cup and walks upstairs with it.
Yeah. JD's only fault in that scenario was enabling. He did not stop Veronica from taking the drainer cup up there.
And
she didn't think that it was the drain cleaner cup. She thought it was the
orange juice cup. But she had it, then she handed it to JD, and JD handed it to Heather Chandler. So it was almost like it was an accident on her part. So I don't think she viewed it as JD just straight up did this. It was more like, I made a mistake, and... That's what happened.
I don't know. He made it pretty clear that he had absolutely no regrets about it. Like, he kind of played the whole, like, oh, I'm going to touch my face to make it look like I'm regretting something. But then he was like, but hey, you know, could have been suicide. Like, he thought of it really quickly. And she
Yeah, I think she saw what she wanted to see. I think that's all it was.
And that comes up later, too.
Yeah, I think as the movie progresses, her viewpoint on JD... The mask is stripped away and she realizes who he is. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a struggle for her because I think she, even after the Ram and Kurt death, when she gets all mad, she still stays with him for a bit.
Only for a bit, though.
But they're still joking around.
Well, because at that point, you know, who else are you going to go to? Like, you're kind of stuck with this person because of what you've done. And, like, if you go away, what if he decides to pin it all on you?
Partners in crime.
Exactly. Like, she, you know, she just kind of felt trapped in this thing, or at least that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Veronica panics, but JD urges her to forge a dramatic suicide note in Heather Chandler's handwriting. The school and community look on Chandler's apparent suicide as a tragic decision made by a troubled teenager, making her more worshipped in death than in life.
Oh, that... teacher counselor lady.
Oh my gosh. the counselor lady. She reminded me of a, she reminded me of, like, a worse version of Britta from Community, like, trying to get everyone to, like, hold hands and admit all their emotions, but, like, it's really terrible at it.
What I really, I hated the fact of how hardcore she got the, I think one thing that this movie attests to is the fact of how serious suicide should be taken and how media almost romanticizes suicide.
Yep. Well, and not just media, school, everybody. Yeah.
Because the school gets so much attention and so much traction over a murder.
They get all this media attention. Everyone's trying to stand up and say that they were, like, her best friend because they're like, you know, I want to get my 15 minutes of fame. And it really is, like, I thought it was a very accurate commentary on, like, how, you know, when a kid, you know, makes that choice and, you know, ends their life, suddenly there's all this attention and, like, everything swarms to it. And it's not in a way of, like, you know, we need to, it's usually not in a form where it's awareness, where it's like, hey, you can get help if you feel like this, you know, let's encourage, you know, kids to do that. It's usually in a way of, let's just point and, like, and look at this person, like, let's just point at the school and point at all the things in their life and just, like, put a spotlight on it. That all those teachers were absolutely ridiculous.
Trash.
Every single one of those teachers.
It reminded me of, and I'm trying to think of what it is, but there's another 80s or 90s movie that has a similar kind of thing where all of the adults are just the absolute worst. And I'm trying to think of what it is. But it's another similar kind of social commentary on adults, how a lot of times adults just don't try to understand.
Well, and that's honestly something that I really liked with the parents. Every scene with Veronica's parents, I liked that. I mean, you made a comment on it that the second scene with them was the exact same as the first scene, like almost the exact same dialogue, with just like a slight change. I honestly really liked that because it really showed how, like, a lot of times parents will just kind of write off a teenager as just being a teenager, and they're just like, okay, you know, I'll ask him how school is, because, like, the very first one was like, so how was your first day after, you know, spring break? And then the next one he goes, so how was your first day after Heather Chandler's suicide? And, like, it was so casual and just, like, and absolutely just no substance, no actual listening. And it was just like, okay, I gotta go, like, bye-bye. And they were just like, bye, you know, like, letting her go. And it really is, like, I thought that was a very smart way of just showing how parents can, like, you know,
It shows the generational gap of how attentive they are to, you know, suicide and, like, how detached that set generation is from what the newer generation has to deal with and come up in.
And I don't even think it's just parents. I think it's also just people who are close to, anyone close to a person who may be going through something.
Right.
Just not even, like, not even asking, not even, or looking without seeing, you know, hearing without listening, just being like, oh, okay, yeah, she seemed kind of bummed out today. And it's like, no, but she seems upset every day. Like, maybe you should look into this, you know?
Right.
And people, I thought that was a very smart commentary, like, with the parents specifically. Especially I really liked everything scene. With them. Yes, yes.
The TV scene was a great scene.
Yeah, and when like, JD came and, like, told them that she was gonna commit suicide, and they were just like, yeah, he warned us about this, and they didn't even, like, follow her up to her room. They just kind of watched her leave and just went, ugh, crazy kid, like, you know, letting her go up. And I was just like, dude, that is, like, a painfully painfully on the nose with that, but it was very smart.
That's one of the better things they did in the movie, was everything with the adults and showing, and obviously it's overdone to a certain extent because it's a satire and it's a dark comedy, so you've got to go over the top a little bit, but the point that they were getting across, I thought, was really, really well done.
Yeah, well, we skip forward a little bit, and Heather Duke soon steps into the role of the clique's leader and begins wearing a red scrunchie that had belonged to Heather Chandler. Which that happened kind of out of nowhere, that she just had all this confidence. I mean, I appreciated that after Heather Chandler's quote-unquote suicide, it showed the three remaining members of the clique all standing around and Heather Duke feeling free to eat for the first time. Like, she ate, like, a chicken wing in the locker room and just threw it behind her and was like, yeah, whatever. And I liked that, you know, it kind of showed her being freed of that grip because because that fed Veronica's like trust of JD, because she was like, oh, this really did kind of like help people, so maybe I shouldn't feel so bad about it. Right. But then she sees that Heather Duke just filled the power vacuum and right. became like, you know, just became another version of Heather Chandler. And she's like, oh, great. So apparently there has to always be someone in this position. No matter what I do, it's going to always be permanent.
Yeah.
So McNamara convinces Veronica to go with her, Kurt, and Ram on a double date, during which the boys end up drunk and pass out in cow manure, which I haven't seen a cow tipping scene since, like, what was it, Cars?
Yeah, Cars. Cars was yes, the last one.
Cars is the last time I saw a cow tipping scene, and, like, I'm sorry, I thought that was very funny. But yeah, so they pass out. The following day, they spread a false rumor about Veronica performing oral sex on them, ruining her reputation, which sets JD on another, ooh, let's, you know, cause another stage suicide thing.
Igloo bullets.
Oh, dude. Dude, I looked up something about that. So the name of those bullets... Well, hold on. So, yeah. So basically, for anyone who didn't see the movie, JD proposes that she lure them into the woods and then shoot them with non-fatal bullets. He convinces her that they are something called... I have the name written down here. I think it's like Igloo...
Yeah, Igloo bullets or something.
Yeah, yeah. I can't speak German, but it's Igloo bullets. And, yeah, so he tricks her by calling them that. Which he claims only pierce the skin, but Ich Lug is German for I lie or I'm lying. And right before he tells her that they are Ich Lug bullets, he asks if she knows German.
Yep. So and that she says, wouldn't nope, know. French.
And he's yeah. like, great, and then tells her all this stuff.
And she ate it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, JD is like a master manipulator.
Oh, he, I mean...
Like, he is really good at what he does.
He's terrifyingly
you
good.
You get the idea that this is not the first time he's done this.
Oh, 100% it's not the first time. And look at his dad. How would this be the first time? His dad's just as psychotic as he is. His dad came home with a videotape, puts it in. Yes, of him blowing up a building that people were still in. And he blows it up and was like, yeah, I put this one thing. I thought
people were not
in
still in the building. That was a construction project.
Oh, never mind. I thought people were in the building.
The only time they referenced somebody being in the building was with his mom. When his mom went into a building right before he blew it up a while ago. Yeah.
And that's where the tension between JD and his dad comes in.
Yes. Because JD's, Yeah, it's a, like, I mean, you see him come home and just revel in how he blew up this building. And he talks about where he put the explosives in very specific ways and everything. And then you don't expect him to be influenced by that? Like, I don't understand. Their whole dynamic was very odd.
I did like the whole, hey, Dad, hey, son.
I liked that. That was good. That was funny.
Yeah.
The comedy of dark comedy coming out there.
Yes. Like, I liked that his dad was definitely
you definitely saw where it came from.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was their whole, like, you know, I'm going to pass down my destruction of
psychotic
property. And
tendencies.
Yes, I'm going to pass down my psychotic tendencies to my son.
Which, again, like, blowing up the buildings, like, that's not a problem. It's the reveling in...
In murdering people.
Well, the reveling in...
Destruction?
The reveling in it. Because it's one thing, well, and like, look. Any guy who is working on a construction project and they get to blow up a building, that's cool.
They're gonna
like,
have a good time.
Every guy is gonna have a good time on that. That's fun. That's cool. It's the reveling in and rubbing it in the faces of all the people who didn't want it to happen.
Yes.
That's where you see the kind of psychotic tendencies starting to come out.
Because you saw when he was looking at it, he wasn't like, hey, how cool is this? He was like, I got to do it all. And they did, and I just got to watch their faces, you know, and like all this stuff. And I'm just like, dude, like, you don't need to influence your son like this. He's clearly very impressionable and is learning your tendencies. But yeah, so they go into the woods with these quote unquote non-fatal bullets. JD shoots and kills Ram, but Veronica misses Kurt, who runs away. JD chases Kurt back towards Veronica and kills him. Which actually Veronica killed him, not JD.
Which again, I think shows just how kind of brainwashed she was because she saw who was it, Ram who got shot first?
Ram got shot first.
She saw that Ram was dead.
Yeah.
And she still shot Kurt.
But I mean, okay, so as someone who was extremely impressionable in high school, I never killed anybody, but I'm just saying, that would be a weird way to confess it on a podcast. But I'm saying I was super, super impressionable when I was in high school. Like, I would basically do anything to be accepted. And so watching this and watching her, I was like, I don't know that I would have actually, like, pulled a trigger and killed somebody, but, like, I understood, like, someone just, you know, like, you wanting so bad to be accepted, and you already know that you're in so deep, and someone just kind of yells at you to do this thing, and you just spastically kind of do it really quick, and you don't even necessarily realize it until after it's done. So that kind of, like, I understood why that happened, and why she did that. Even though I know, like, I'm pretty sure that she did not actually want to kill him. Because when she looked at Ram, she kept trying to wake him up. She was like, yeah. Come on, like, you know, get up, dude. Which, by the way, there was not much blood for getting shot in the throat. There was, like, a teeny little trickle of blood for getting shot through the throat.
There would definitely be, I'm pretty sure there would be also, with how close that was, shouldn't there have been an exit wound?
I mean, there may have been. There may have been.
Well, what I'm saying is there should have been way more blood.
It would have been a lot bloodier than that. Yes.
Yeah. They saved all their fake blood for his middle finger getting shot off. Yep. That's where they saved all the fake blood. They couldn't use it on just a simple, like, neck shot. They couldn't do that. So, yeah, JD plants material next to the boys, implying that they were gay, and a note stating the two were lovers participating in a suicide pact. At their funeral, the boys are made into martyrs against homophobia. So yet again, two people that they've killed have become heroes. Have become heroes as a result of committing suicide, which is another kind of glorification thing that they're commenting on.
So, Danielle, there's a scene in the musical that is not in the movie. Very funny.
One of my favorites.
In a very messed up kind of way. But at Ram and Kurt's funeral, their
dads.
Fathers, their dads,
come
sing
out.
A song called I Love My Dead Gay Son. And in it, they confess that they were gay lovers. When
what?
They were in high school, and decide that they're going to divorce their wives and get married.
What?
In honor of their dead gay sons.
Yes.
Yeah. That's incredible.
We'll have to play it for you afterwards.
Yeah. Yes, please play it for me.
It's so good.
It is one of the funniest songs. Also, Ram and Kurt have a really funny song before they get shot in the musical, which is
the Blue Ball song.
Oh, I have heard of that one.
Blue Balls is fantastic.
When KSU did it, it was because it was Carson.
Honestly, both
and,
both it was Carson and I actually don't remember the other gentleman.
They did a really good job. It was one of the best numbers in the show.
But a Dead Gay Sons song was also pretty well done by KSU as well.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to listen to that.
Yes. We'll show you that after.
Yes, show it to me afterwards. So, yeah, although she keeps dating JD, Veronica is increasingly disturbed by his behavior. Martha Dunstock, an overweight student, pins a suicide note to her chest and walks into traffic. This was the woman, or the girl, who, at the beginning of the movie, the Heathers convince Veronica, because apparently she's a master forger, to write a note that looks like it's in Kurt's handwriting that's a love note for Martha.
Yep.
And Martha goes up and asks him about it, and them being the, you know, that they are, just laugh in her face until she runs out of the cafeteria. Which, I felt so bad for Martha the entire movie. Oh, I was like, she's just trying to, like, live her life, dude. Like,
and what's even worse is that she feels the only way she can get glory
is
by committing suicide.
Yeah, she's like, you know, everyone else has done it and then become, like, even more popular than before. So if this is the only way that I can, like, become somebody, then I guess I'm going to do it. And then she gets made fun of afterwards because she doesn't even succeed at it. And everyone calls her, like, a pathetic imitator and, like, all this stuff.
Right. Whenever she's probably the one with, like,
she's the one,
most mental psychological.
Yes. Like, she's absolutely actually depressed. And, like, and she wasn't just doing it for, like, the glory.
She genuinely, like, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
I'm going to take power into my own hands. And she deems it that's the way to do it. She fails and gets called an imitator for people that didn't even commit suicide.
Exactly, yeah. So she survives, but is badly injured and mocked by her peers. Later, McNamara calls a radio show to discuss her depression. The next day, Duke tells the entire school about the radio call. McNamara attempts suicide by overdosing in the girls' bathroom, but she's saved by Veronica.
I really like this moment. Both in the movie and in the musical, this is one of my favorite moments in the whole thing.
I thought that was
thing.
Very well acted by both of those girls. Mm-hmm. Like when she goes in and, you know, Veronica is just sort of being there for her and, you know, telling her that that's not, you know, the way that she like that she needs to actually, you know, keep moving because life is hard and, like, you know, it's hard for everybody. And then they just kind of sit together and, like, you know, they actually look like friends, whereas Veronica yes. never looked like friends with any of the Heathers. And suddenly for that moment with Heather McNamara, they actually look like friends and they're actually, like, happy to have each other's company. And, like, she's happy to feel heard and, like, she's not a psycho for being depressed.
Right.
Yeah, I really liked that scene. That was a really sweet, really, just a really good scene. I really enjoyed that. So Veronica tells JD that she will not participate in any more killings and breaks up with him. And this is where everything really hits the fan. So JD blackmails Heather Duke into getting the students to sign a petition that, unbeknownst to her, is intended to act as a mass suicide note. Because this was a petition to get Big Fun to come and play. But then again, you know, she kind of told everyone different things.
To get them to sign.
Exactly. Which we didn't say beforehand. This was all masterminded by JD because he's the one who got Heather Duke to step into the position of Heather Chandler. He's the one who sat her down and was like, you're strong. We need strength. Go and do the thing or else I'm going to blackmail you. And so he blackmails her, like, a long time ago, and then just continues doing it with this petition. So later, Veronica fakes her own suicide to trick JD, who assumes she is dead and reveals his plan to blow up the school during a pep rally, which I was very impressed with her sheet maneuvering to quote unquote hang herself.
Yeah, it was well done.
It was very well done.
Her poor mother.
Oh my gosh, her mom. But even her mom
recovered so fast.
Her mom walks in, sees her daughter's body hanging, and immediately starts confessing to things she should have let her do, which was something so minuscule. It was like, I should have let you take that job at the mall. And she just looks up and is like, hey, mom. And just unstraps herself really quick from her little, because it was around her midsection was where it was. It wasn't around her neck.
One around her neck, and then they had the actual weight being supported by another. Yeah,
and she just hung in the right way to make it look like she was actually hanging. No, that was very smart. And immediately the mom is just like, I couldn't tell if she was mad or just she hadn't registered anything. Like, the mom's expression was so hard to read
there. The disconnect.
Yes, it was a huge disconnect. But the next day, she confronts JD in the boiler room, which is where his dad had talked about putting the influential explosive, so that's how she knew where to find him, while he is planting dynamite. She shoots him, and his switchblade cuts the wires to the detonator. So this is where he flips her off, and then she shoots his middle finger off, and just so much blood comes pouring out of his hand.
So much
blood. Way more blood than the neck wound or the chest wound from the other two guys who both got shot. Yes, and his switchblade, stabs into the thing and, stops the timer.
So lucky.
Oh, very, very lucky. Because honestly, you couldn't believe a word he said. Like, she was asking him, you know, what button turns it off? And he was like, the middle one. Hit the middle one. Go ahead. But of course she knew. She was like, I have no way of knowing if that's actually true or if that's going to instant detonate. Like, I have no clue if that's actually, a thing.
Right.
Yes, so JD follows Veronica outside with a bomb strapped to his chest, offers a personal eulogy, and detonates the bomb, killing himself. Which I did appreciate that they didn't show him exploding. I really didn't want to see all that, and that they didn't show her, covered in viscera and everything, because I really didn't want to see any of that. I appreciated that that wasn't a thing, and that there wasn't just blood splattered everywhere, because I was like, that would have been a little too much for a dark comedy.
Yeah, for a dark comedy.
And after this, she is just a mess. Like, she's looking an absolute mess at this point. She's covered in
her hair's smoke. All over the place. She's covered in char and,
and blood.
She's just, what's even funnier is she just lights a cigarette and is just...
Well, I actually liked that that he was like, so now that everything's over, what are you going to do with your life? And she just puts a cigarette in her mouth. And that was it. And I was like, I kind of like that. Because it's just I don't know, I guess I'm just going to do this for now. I don't know what I'm going to do next. So Veronica confronts Duke, takes the red scrunchie, and asserts herself as the new leader. And her first act as new leader is inviting Martha to spend prom night watching movies together as Duke watches on. So basically her being if anyone's going to be the leader, it needs to be someone who's not...
scared to be inclusive.
Right, who's not scared to actually, talk to the people who need it the most, you know? Right. So I appreciated that. I liked that, you know, at the end. And it didn't seem like a pity thing. It seemed like she felt relieved. When she walked up to talk to Martha, she looked so comfortable. and was like, and it was almost like a huge weight was off her that she was like, do you just want to go hang out? Like, come on. Like,
I could
you know.
Be entirely wrong, but, and this is for a whole different generation. I could be thinking of a different movie, but was it Young Mr. Mosby?
Yes, it was. It was Young Mr. Mosby. He has no idea who that is, but I was sitting there and I was like, is that Mr. Mosby? And he goes, from what? And I was like, The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. But yes, that was Young Mr. And it was Mosby. So weird. I looked at it and I was like, I have never seen him at an age younger than like 35. So it was
and he still
very,
hasn't grown.
He's been the same size since Heathers.
So good.
Yes. But his character was nice. I liked his character.
It was a cool character.
All right. Well, that was Heathers. So time for our guessing game. What do you guys think that this is rated on Rotten Tomatoes, the critical score?
I'm going to say 78%.
Okay.
I'm going to shoot at a solid 89.
You were closer, John. It has a super high rating, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, okay. I almost went in the 90s. I was like, it's Rotten Tomato.
Mm-hmm. What about the audience score?
Knowing that the critical score was so high, I feel like the audience wouldn't like it quite as much as the critics, because that's normally what happens with these kind of movies. So I'm going to say 82.
We'll say 86.
You were closer, Sam. It was 83. Okay. You were really close. Okay. All right, IMDb, this is out of 10.
I'm going to say a solid 8.9. Again, I'm going with like 89.
Okay.
8.9.
It's going to be somewhere right around there. I'll say 8.7.
Well, I guess you were closer, but it's a lot lower than that. It's a 7.2 on IMDb,
ooh,
guys.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a lot lower. So it had a budget. It did not do very well, but there's a reason for that. So it had a budget of like $2 to $3 million and only made $1.1 million. Yes.
Wow.
But I looked this up. According to IrishTimes.com, they did a article just about the movie as a whole. The production company closed a few weeks after the movie was released, and they weren't able to, like, market the film well at all because they basically had no money. Like, they poured pretty much every cent they had just into making the movie, and then they didn't have anything left to market it.
So didn't get the popularity.
Yes, exactly. Because now, as we know, Heathers is like a huge cult thing. Like, everyone loves, like...
Heathers!
It's like a big cult following. And so like, you know, it just didn't do well at the time, but it's a big thing now. So sorry to that production company, I guess. But yeah, so I went on Amazon and I found some reviews. So everything was very polar opposite with these reviews. Like either, I mean...
They loved it or they hated
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Like, so the 83% of viewers rated it 5 stars, which is pretty good. And what I found is that for the most part... The big consensus between people who loved it was it's an amazing satire. It calls out like all these very important topics that need to be talked about, and right. And it also includes like some kind of dark humor to lighten it up at certain points. And it, you know, it basically predicted how our world was going to be way before it became that way.
Absolutely.
Then a lot of the negatives are that, you know, I have some that I could read, but basically they're all the same. The negatives were basically that it's glorifying suicide, that it's, you know, it's just this filthy kind of like shrine to all these terrible things in high school.
I think that is people that didn't understand the fact that this was a satirical.
Yes.
Because that's what they're targeting. They're like, yo, we need to really stop glorifying this idea of suicide and address the problem that is causing suicide.
Yes.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yes.
And that's, you know, I have some gripes with some of the acting in the movie and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, both the movie and the musical, the story is really, really well done, in my opinion.
Yes.
It just, like you said, it was kind of before its time. It addressed it in a very palatable way that I don't feel like glorified suicide at all.
No.
No.
I think if anything, it called out the major issues with media glorifying suicide. Right. It pulled all these, it showed you exactly what happens, which is that it immortalizes these people and then it causes others to want to imitate, like with Martha, where, you know, she was like, where she felt so lost and alone that she was like, well, maybe if I do this, then I'll be a hero, you know?
Right.
And she was actually depressed. And so, you know, you add just fuel to the fire and there you are. And it really called out like those big issues with that. But yeah, so I, you know, that I didn't feel like reading the reviews because they were all basically the same, you know, just like either super positive or super negative. So like,
right.
And they all pretty much said the same thing. But I did find some trivia on IMDb about this movie. So Christian Slater has stated that his performance in this was heavily inspired by Jack Nicholson.
That tracks heavily.
Yes.
Yeah.
I see that so strongly.
Yes, he claims.
That makes a lot of sense.
He said he wrote a letter to Nicholson asking him to watch the movie and never got an answer back. And this is something that me and Sam were talking about when we watched it. We were right. So Veronica Sawyer and Betty Finn are named after fictional friends Veronica and Betty from Archie, but also Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. I didn't realize that. But then again, I wasn't paying attention to their last names. The name Heather is said 90 times throughout the film. JD is named after Winona Ryder's favorite author, JD Salinger. With the character's rebellious attitude and loner persona, the name is also obviously a nod to James Dean. So they took a lot of stuff.
Isn't that his name?
No, his name is Jason Dean.
Jason Dean, okay.
Yeah.
I guess I just hear Jay Dean and I assume James Dean because I really thought that was his name. And I thought it was just a blatant ripoff.
I mean, it's a pretty safe assumption. So, if we were to cast each other in this, which is going to be funny because this is actually a musical that we could be cast in, what do y'all think?
In the musical, John would be one of the dads.
Probably.
Yeah, I probably
would be one of the dads. In the musical, at least. Movie-wise?
I mean, I could see you still as Veronica's dad.
Yeah.
I think you could also be
that head really mean teacher with the really intense eyebrows.
John could play most of the adult males.
Most of the adult males, and if I had to, like, I could probably like slim down and bulk up a little bit to play one.
Heather
of
Chandler.
John.
Oh,
you could play Ram.
I probably could play Ram.
Yeah,
I could see Danielle pulling off either Heather Duke or Heather McNamara.
McNamara.
Heather Marinara.
Heather Marinara.
Yeah, no. Danielle could play Duke or McNamara.
Okay.
Only reason Chandler is because of size. She has to be intimidating.
Excuse me. I played Ava, and I was very intimidating.
Ava's also supposed to be small.
Yes.
Heather Chandler is supposed to be very tall.
Oh, whatever. Whatever, 6 foot boy.
I mean, you could be Veronica. You could play. I would probably cast you as Heather McNamara.
Okay.
I
mean, I like
but
her
you
character.
could be plenty of
but
people.
She does have to be a cheerleader. I don't know if I can cheerlead. Does she have to cheerlead?
You literally
just brought up the
Ava thing.
Yeah, but I'm not an actual cheerleader.
No, she doesn't have to cheerlead in the musical.
Okay,
no,
cool. Okay.
There's no like
I'm
direct
happy with
reference
that. I'm happy
to...
with that. I liked Heather McNamara.
You,
she seemed cool.
Samuel, I think you're in the same boat that I'm in, except you could really honestly pull off JD if need be.
I think I see you more... Well, I could see you as JD, potentially, but I see you as either... I could see you as either Kurt, like if like y'all could play Ram and Kurt together, probably, or I could see you as... If we're not caring too much about age, I could also see you as JD's dad.
Yeah.
I can see you as JD's dad.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would fit really well.
I can back that.
Yeah. So, favorite and least favorite moments of this, guys. My favorite was probably, I thought the crazy dream sequence where it looked like Heather Duke was in a cult at like, her funeral with 3D glasses and everyone in, like, a white gown and everything.
Oh,
that kind of made me laugh. I was like, because I was like, what? Like, I assumed it was a cult. I was like, that's the only thing that would make sense is that she has to be a cult. And then it turned out to be a dream sequence. And I was like, okay.
You know, I'm a simple man with simple needs. And the cow tipping scene was just fantastic.
But also, I think we can all agree, probably the best scene was the Heather McNamara-Veronica scene.
I was going to say, the Heather McNamara-Veronica bathroom scene, that was my favorite scene. And then my least favorite moment was all of the acting from the supporting characters.
From the supporting characters? Except for Martha. I thought Martha was played very well. I think she was played very accurately.
Yes.
For how an outsider that, you know, doesn't have much self-esteem would act, you know, in an actual high school setting.
Right.
No, I think my least favorite would probably be just because I don't know. I don't know what my least favorite would be. I don't really know. Maybe...
The convenience store scene is also one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's
a good
scene.
Thing that frees your brain in the musical? Yep.
I would have to say my least favorite scene is probably... just because of how it's written and just the way the characters respond, I just hate how it's written. Scene? It's like, it's such a blatant lie, and they just play to the naivety of Veronica, and I'm just like, that could have probably been written better, in my opinion, but that's just me.
I think my least favorite was, I had it in my head, Heather Chandler's death scene, because her death acting was really rough. That was probably my least favorite, because it was such an instant reaction. There would at least be a second of not dying.
Like, realizing, yet. Like...
Yeah, like she was like, at the second the cup came down, she was dying. And I was like, that wouldn't happen. You would have a second where you're like, oh, that tastes bad, and then suddenly start dying. That was probably my least favorite, was that one. Yeah, I think that is mine. So out of 10 croquet mallets, how would you rate this one, John?
The movie, I would have to unfortunately give a 7.2 croquet mallets.
Okay, 7.2.
I'll give the movie 7.5 for the story, because the story is really good.
Story's still there.
And because the musical really follows the exact same plot.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll give the movie 7.5. I'd give the musical 9.1.
Yeah, I can back that.
Well, as someone who has never seen the musical, I can't rate that. but as far as the movie, I did really like the story. I liked the message that it had. And I thought they did very well with the satire of it. Obviously, there was like some rough acting here and there that, you know, I had some trouble with. But for the most part, that didn't take away from my experience. Okay. So I would probably give it... Honestly, yeah, I think I would agree with Sam, probably a solid, like, 7.5, because, you know, I'll knock it off a little bit for, like, you know, kind of weird acting and writing. Yeah, and some weird writing here and there, but overall, I do think it's pretty solid. Like,
the story is well told, just, there's definitely that margin for improvement.
Yes, I mean, with all 80s movies, you know, there's kind of a margin for improvement, but it did, I feel like it did its job very well. You know, it was trying to tell this very accessible and, you know, necessary story about high school and just about, you know, sort of mental health in general. And I think it did a good job of that. And really, like, you know, kind of making jokes with it and having that satire really did bring about, it really did, like, put a good kind of mirror up to your face and be like, okay, really look at, like, what you're seeing here and why you think it's funny or why you don't think it's funny.
The whole point, like, of comedy is, like, to show that kind of, like, here's what's really messed up about society. Let's look at it.
Society! Gotta see what's wrong with it! Yeah, but I thought it did a good job. I thought it was,
Witness me.
Oh my gosh. Full circle. Yeah, I thought it did a good job. So, yeah, 7.5 from me. But, yeah, I think that's all that we have for you guys today. So, as usual, go follow the Mad Artists Instagram, Facebook, and we actually just got a Twitter where we're basically just putting out general announcements about auditions and Banterbox and everything with that. You can follow us there at @artists_mad. On Instagram, we finally got our handle officially changed to match our LLC name, which is Mad Artist Entertainment. So you can follow us there. And on Facebook, also at Mad Artist Entertainment.
Be sure to follow us definitely on Spotify. That way you'll constantly have our little thing on your little favorite show button.
Or if you have Apple Podcasts, you can follow us on there.
And please leave a review.
Of course. Helps out a lot. Yes, leave us a review. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you like the podcast, if there's things we can improve on, if you have any suggestions, any comments or questions or future suggestions for things for us to review. You can email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. And we will take those into account for our next episodes. So next week, we're going to be watching Total Recall, the version with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold!
But yeah, so tune into us next week for that. Shoot us an email, give us a review, follow us, and we will see you guys next time. Bye!
Bye!